The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's a Sunday morning. You're listening to Beat. I hope you're doing well this morning. And my first guest on the show this morning went from being a renter to someone who moved back home to building her forever home. And she did that solo. Jade Kirwan is from County Tipperary and she took out the middleman by going on a self-build journey. And she documented the process on her My Solo Self-Build Instagram account. She broke ground in April 2020. And she's going to join me on the Sunday Grill this morning to tell us more. You're very welcome, Jade.
Hello, how are you, Orla?
I'm really well, thank you. Congratulations. Are you in your house now?
We are in, thank God. Yes.
Brilliant. How long are you in now?
Just nearly 2 months now.
Oh, fab. I remember that so well. And then it just flies by. We built during COVID. And now, as you know yourself, there's things to do for years to come. But yes, it was such an amazing experience to move in. Sometimes I look at the photos and think, how are the carpets ever that clean? So you're at the clean carpet
the
stage.
Yeah. It's the photos like that that really kind of help you realise how far you've come.
Oh, totally. Tell us a little bit about yourself. So you're based in County Tipperary and you're a makeup artist. Is that right?
Yeah, so I am 33. I'm a makeup artist in Tipperary. I specialise in bridal makeup. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as you said, I took on this journey and it really was my clients. They were kind of just asking me what I was up to, what was going on, how it was going. And that's how the page started. And now look, I suppose everyone likes following along and seeing, I suppose, the things you can do yourself and where you can save. And I suppose I just hope that my page can help others and inspire others to take a chance and it can pay off.
And there's been so much talk about the housing crisis and what the lack of houses there are to buy. And you were doing this as a single mum, weren't you? Which is even harder again to try and get a mortgage and do everything.
Yeah, like to do it as a couple, it's very difficult and people know that. And I suppose to do it solo, it is a little bit harder again. And look, I took on the challenge and I thought about it for a very long time and I thought about where I wanted to be and what my goals were and what I wanted. And yeah, I had to make it happen.
Yeah, and you did make it happen. So you were lucky in the same position as me that your dad had land so you could get a site in that way.
Yeah, so like some people say it's half the battle. I don't know about that. It's definitely help.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was very grateful that my dad did give me a site and I suppose that's it went from there. Then planning and I got my planning the second time around. So I'm very grateful to get that because I know it's very difficult and thankfully I did get it. And then COVID hit, so there was no building allowed and eventually, when everything was lifted, we got going.
Brilliant. And when you say you cut out the middleman, how would you explain that for people? Like you weren't, you know, people think you were, you know, putting blocks down and stuff like that, but you weren't doing that.
No, not to that full extent. basically, I didn't get a builder and I didn't get a project manager. Mm. So I went to direct labour and I subcontracted in who I needed and who was necessary. And then anything I thought I could do myself, I did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And like what I see on your Instagram, like you did the insulation yourself, for example, did you?
Oh, God. Yeah, that insulation.
Do you know what?
My house is so warm that it was worth all the tears.
And like, what are you doing? You're looking at YouTube videos. How are you getting all this information?
Yeah, like YouTube and gathering information and speaking to people in similar situations. Mm. And I gathered as much information and there's so many different ways to do things. So like there's different ways of insulating the cavity. There's different ways of you can do insulated poured concrete or the screener you can have, which I put down all the sheets of insulation. Like there's different ways and there's no right or wrong. I suppose just what one is right for you. Yeah. So I gathered as much information, chose the route I wanted to go down. And yeah, like it wasn't easy. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it and tell anyone it was easy. Mm. There was a lot of tears, but you know what? There's a lot more perks and there's a lot more smiles than there is tears. And you know, if I can do it with absolutely no experience, anyone could do it.
What are those perks, Jade? What's the main advantage of doing this on your own.
It's a save. You can save money by doing as much work as possible yourself. So that's why a lot of people nowadays are going down the route that I went down, if they're in the position to do so. So you can save a lot of money going this way. So you're not hiring anyone to do it. Yes, they'll possibly do it that bit quicker. But if you're not against the clock with time, you can make a huge saving by doing as much as you can yourself.
And you chose a two-story house, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it's actually a story and a half.
Okay, so it's why did you choose that?
Well, my dad is two-story, and I suppose I grew up in a two-story, and it's something I've always loved. We're living out in the country. Like, I just think it's very fitting to the area. And I just adore Kilkenny limestone. So I have beautiful Kilkenny limestone on the front face of the house then as well.
Gorgeous. And you're in now, as you said. This is a terrible question to ask you, Jade, but I question myself all the time. Is there anything you'd change?
Oh, yeah, there is. Definitely. Yeah, there is.
Like, what would you change? Like, I'd love a massive utility. I wish I'd done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like the plant room. I knew the plant room was going to be something that took up a lot of space. Now, I have it so well planned that it's taken up the minimal amount of space as possible. But even at that, I wish I made it bigger again.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. But sure, look, you've done such an amazing job. And yourself and your teenage son have moved in. Is that right?
Yes, we're in. We're in and we're settled. And
both loving
it. Yeah, it hits me every once in a while. And look, we're not done. We're still doing bits.
Of course.
Currently adding architraves and skirting boards. And yeah, like, people love following along. And I get a lot of messages off people. And I said, like, I'm not an expert, but I'm happy to help where I can for others. And I post along to bring people along on the journey on my Instagram page, as you said, my solo self-build. And people can follow along and they can see like the different stages and what stages I went along with, and hopefully that it can help somebody.
And you feel that, you know, you were probably so busy like 24/7 and with your job as a makeup artist as well. Have you got lots of extra time now that the main part of the self-build is over?
Unfortunately not. Oh. I'm still doing things. I was painting last night up to late, and I was gone very early this morning and just finished with a bride there now. She's going to get married, and do you know, I'm going home now and I'm going to finish painting.
Wow.
Look, you're never done, and that's another thing. Like, my page is very real and what we're doing is very real, and we're not after walking into a finished house or a show house or anything by any means. And it's that, I suppose, a little bit of reassurance for others to say, you can still move in. I had no doors when I moved in.
Yeah.
Now, thankfully, they're hanging now. They're up.
Brilliant.
And like, you know, it bit by bit, and Rome wasn't built in a day. And I'm fine with that because I've accomplished this on my own. And if anyone would like to do something like this, they're well able.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your house is absolutely gorgeous. Your kitchen.
Thank you.
I have extreme kitchen envy. I love that you've gone for the two colours, the different colour on the island as well. I think sometimes when you have a bit of time pressure as well, you kind of choose things really quickly. Were you careful with your choosing? Did you feel you had a bit more time to do stuff like that?
Yeah, like, I was in a lovely position where I wasn't under pressure to be out. As I said, I moved home, and yeah, like, I was very careful. It's been a long time coming. Like, it's nearly 9-10 years since I started to even try and get planning. And I have changed. My style has changed. And I think you have to accept that no matter what you choose and what's going on, that might be on trend now. By the time you get in, it's possibly out of trend, or things are moving forward. Or, like, I had to stop looking. I had to stop looking on Pinterest, on Instagram, and on everything else, because I constantly wanted to add things on. I'm like, oh, I want that now. Or, oh, that's out now. I want that. And yeah, you have to kind of reel it back in, and you have to make your decisions and move on, move to the next thing, because there's so much decision making. And that's a really hard part. And that's very overwhelming. And I meet women every day of the week in my studio, and they're like, how do you make the decisions? I'm like, you need to just make them and move on.
Yeah, such good advice. Well, if you want more advice like that and to look at some fairly beautiful house pictures, both inside and outside, well, my solo self-build is where you'll find Jade, and her house is in the heart of the County Tipperary countryside. It looks gorgeous from there as well, Jade. Congratulations. Enjoy all your time in your lovely house. It's just beautiful. And thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
Thanks so much, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Five counties, one station. You are listening to Beat, and we all know the issues when it comes to fast fashion by now. Globally, it's estimated that one full truckload of textiles goes to landfill or incineration every second, while less than 1% of material used to produce clothing is recycled into new products. And this week, it seems my social media is filled with pictures of just clothes mansions along coastlines in various parts of the world. Well, Jo Linehan is a sustainability columnist, and she's talking about how to invest in better clothing and what to do with clothing when it's no longer wanted or needed in this month's Irish Country magazine. And they just happen to be celebrating their 100th edition as well. And Jo joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning. You're very welcome, Jo.
Thank you so much for having me, Orla.
And this is a column that you have on Irish Country magazine.
Yes, I write a column for every issue, and I like to look at different topics that affect us every single day, and then maybe give a bit of insight, and then maybe some tips and tricks then on how people can maybe make small changes in their everyday. And of course, fashion affects us all. Okay. In Ireland, we consume about double the amount of fashion than our EU counterparts, so we love our fashion, and it's just about figuring out how do we manage it better.
Is the worm turning a little bit? I still hear the word that I won't repeat when it comes to fast fashion being used when you say someone's top is lovely a lot. But people seem to be more open to the idea of, you know, not doing fast fashion.
I think so. I think in Ireland especially, we've seen such an explosion in the secondhand market. And I think what's really changed is that, you know, we've always had charity shops. They've always existed. Mm. But I think secondhand was always considered second best, especially for my parents' generation. Whereas I think when you look at, you know, Gen Z coming up, they're all about their secondhand fashion. And because you don't have to physically go to, let's say, the likes of a charity shop now, you can download the likes of Vinted on your phone. Yes. You can download Depop. And it's so accessible and easy to shop secondhand. So I think Irish people are getting really good at that, and they're getting really into it and excited about it. And that has really helped shift, as you say, away from maybe the traditional places that people would have felt they had to go and get those fashion fixes.
And it's only been the last maybe 6 weeks or so that I've heard people mention Vinted so much. Something has changed with that app, hasn't it? That means that you can sell, or it just seems to be so much more popular all of a sudden.
Completely. It only actually launched in Ireland earlier this year. Okay. It was a huge in the EU and the UK. I'd always see, you know, people who I follow.
That's
in the
it.
UK
and you go and click on it and you're not allowed to use it.
Yes. And you're so disappointed. So yes, it's launched here. They're really excited about it. And I suppose it's very much like Depop, really. You know, you upload your pics, you put your description of what you want to sell, and you can just pop it in the post. And then there's been, you know, other things that have really boosted that secondhand market too. Like Unpost have a fantastic service where you can just pay a really little amount for this parcel to send your clothes. And what they're trying to do is, you know, instead of making it really fussy for you to have to go weigh an item, get a specific size envelope, do all that, they kind of have these pre-paid boxes and packages. Brilliant. Now, and it's targeted for that. So if you're someone who wants to really get into it and make a few bob, make your pocket money, it's easy to sell. And then obviously to buy, you can do it all online. So you're right, it's really exploded over the last while.
It really has. You also talk about quality clothing in your column in Irish Country magazine this month. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think this is kind of the next phase as well that I've seen, you know, especially on platforms like TikTok. There are some content creators there who are doing amazing work around this. And I suppose what they always say is, you know, when you go into the shop, you'll often pick up a product, a food item, and you'll check the label to see what ingredients are in it, what's made of it. We never do that with our clothing. And part of the reason why we don't do that is the tags are almost impossible to decipher. There can be lots of different languages. The writing can be very, very small. And sometimes it's kind of very hard to decipher what it's actually made of. But this whole new swathe of experts are saying you need to start investigating. Because, for example, if you go and you decide you want a new dress and you go in and it's, you know, really expensive, you're talking, you know, 50, 60 euro. That's a lot of money for most people. If you buy that dress and you don't check the label, you don't really know what you're getting. If you check that label and it's 100% linen or it's 100% cotton, you'll know that that item is not only going to be really easy to wear, it's going to be breathable, it's going to wash very well. It's also, at the end of its life cycle, going to degrade really easily and really naturally. Okay. Whereas if you're spending that amount of money for a synthetic item, you're paying for plastic. And most of the clothing that we wear is some kind of synthetic fossil fuel based plastic item, which is crazy. And the thing about that is, every time you put it into the wash, it breaks down and degrades. It's really hard on your skin. It's not very breathable. It's not a good quality product. So why would you spend that much for that? So there's this whole education piece around understanding what kind of fabrics should I be looking for. I mean, there are places for synthetic fabrics are really important when it comes to athleisure wear and that kind of thing, swimwear. But it's just really kind of getting an understanding of, okay, if I'm going to spend money, I need to kind of understand what am I spending it on. And there's really good education about that now. And it's really exciting. And again, putting the pressure back on companies and fashion brands to make better products.
Okay. And like, that's not about going to a really high-end shop to find those things. Like, you can go into your chain stores and just look at what their different products are made of.
Completely. And that's, I guess, one of the great advances over the last 5 or 6 years, especially when it comes to high street stores, where most of us are doing our shopping. There really has been a push to create options that are made from natural materials, that are made from good quality materials. It doesn't mean that, as you say, you're going to your big expensive designer stores, but it means if you want to buy that fresh white t-shirt for holidays, which most people will want to do, instead of buying some kind of polyester blend, you can buy your 100% a white cotton, and that is going to feel so nice on the skin. It's going to look great. It's going to wash really well. If you get a stain in it, you'll be able to lift that stain really easily. There's so many pluses. So yes, it's super accessible. It's just finding those bits, doing a bit of rummaging when you get in.
Because isn't there nothing worse than getting to Croatia with your haul of t-shirts and putting one on and thinking you're going to sweat to death in this?
Exactly. And that's one of the biggest problems with the synthetics. You know, it's really hard for us. If you think about it, if you wore a piece of plastic, you would not, your skin would not be breathable.
Yeah.
So it's the same with your top. You want it to be able to breathe and feel really lovely.
Where would you think about shopping? Like, do you shop ethically all the time, or do you ever slip up every so often?
I would say I'm the same as everyone else. I try to really plan things. So if I know that I need to buy an item, you know, I've thought about it and I need an item that's new, I'll always go to the secondhand places that I love first.
Yeah.
So for me, I love Vestiaire Collective, and they are a little bit of a higher end resale site. And,
you know, what are they called? Sorry?
It's called Vestiaire Collective.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
It's a French brand. Okay. Yes. They do really cool. And what I love is, a lot of the time, like, I'm a real fashion girl, so I love some of the, you know, the designer stuff and the limited edition stuff. So I'll keep an eye out. I'll set alerts for things. For instance, this year I knew I really wanted a nice pair of cowboy boots, and I decided I'd set an alarm on Vestiaire Collective for when, you know, a pair in my size came in. And I waited a long time, but they finally came in, the ones that I wanted, and I got them at a brilliant price, and they're beautiful, and I know I'm going to wear them with everything. So there's things like that. But then there's other things. Like, I, just like anyone else, I need to buy my PJs and I go to the high street.
Yeah.
But like that, what I do is I check the labels, because I want something when I'm sleeping that is cool, comfortable. So I look for linens, I look for cottons. So I'm definitely not the perfect shopper. I try to make the best decisions in whatever situation I'm in. And I think this is the big message. A lot of people will come away from this maybe feeling guilty and thinking, oh God, like, maybe I shouldn't be shopping. Like, I would not advocate for anyone to feel guilty. You have to deal with the budget and the location that you're in. And we're all just making our best choices. Really, what this is about is just giving people education and making sure that people feel empowered to make the decisions that they want, that they don't feel cornered into buying things for any particular reason.
Yes, such good advice. We talked last week to Jenny from All Sewn Up. She's doing sewing workshops. That seems to be another great thing, being able to fix stuff, you know, or even almost preempting the problems and, like, really sewing that button in and stuff like that. That's a great thing to do as well, isn't it?
It's amazing. And it really, like, so many things like this just go back to the old days of doing things.
Yeah.
Like repairing things. You know, if you lose a button, adding the button back on. I got a pair of shoes re-heeled last year, boots that I loved. And the amount, I put it up on Instagram, the amount of people who messaged me and got back and said, oh my God, I never thought of rehealing the pair of shoes I love, because it's just so easy for us, you know, and accessible for us to go and buy a pair. But it's getting into that mindset again where you think, okay, I actually love this. Maybe I can give it a second life. Maybe I can repair it. So the fact that she's doing those classes is fantastic. Because again, it's empowering people to take power of their wardrobe and feel like, this is my wardrobe. I want to care for it. I want to love it. How can I do that?
Lovely. Going back to the good old days where clothes were beautiful and there was, you just had a little capsule, just gorgeous. Well, that is Jo O'Linehan. She has a column in the Irish Country magazine, if you want to check that out. And they are celebrating their 100th edition this month as well. You can also follow Jo. She's Jo the Futurist on Instagram, and she's lots of great advice on that. And she's in loads of different magazines and papers as well. Jo, thanks for all that advice and for talking to us on the Sunday Grill this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast, you are listening to Beat. It is the Sunday Grill. And let's go a little bit outside the southeast, not too far though, to talk about bees and bee bed therapy. Ballyhobuck Bee Beds are based just outside the southeast in the Glen of Amal in County Wicklow. And bee bed therapy offers a holistic approach to relaxation and wellness, and it harnesses the power of nature and the relationship between humans and bees. The woman behind this is Gillian Moody, and she joins me on the phone this morning to tell us more about it. You're very, very welcome. Bees, eh? And bee beds. I can't even tell you the images I have in my head, which are probably all wrong. Tell us about yourself. Is this something you've always been interested in, Gillian?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, I'm only, a baby when it comes to bees. I know there's quite a lot of people in the area that their family have been keeping bees for generations.
Could you, let me stop you there for 1 second, because could you describe the Glen of Amal for people who mightn't know the area? Because it's quite special, isn't it?
Yeah. So the Glen of Amal is just outside, 6 miles the Dublin side of Baltinglass, mm-hmm. Or it's just 15 miles south of Blessington. We're blessed, I suppose. It's a mountainous area. We have like Lugnaquilla, Cadine, Table Mountain, another Sugarloaf. Now, not the Sugarloaf from Bray, mm-hmm. but there's loads of lovely, you know, walks. There's fabulous cafes. You know, there's the Grange Con Country Kitchen. There's the Hollywood Cafe, the Hollywood Inn.
Lovely.
And it's really, I suppose, a destination for, you know, if you have city living, it's a lovely destination for a day, mm-hmm. you know, just mm-hmm. to get out and a bit of fresh air, a bit of exercise and a bit of bee bed therapy.
Lovely. So bees, how did you get into this?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, I took a course maybe about 10 years ago because I was always interested in bees. Mm-hmm. And I started my own apiary. So at the time, a friend of mine had, a problem with breeding difficulties, you know, in the summertime, typically down to, you know, pollen. So she had said to me, could she have some honey? Now, at the time, I wasn't really producing that much honey. So I think I only had 4 or 5 jars. So every morning she used to get just a scraping of honey on the cracker and eat that so that it would last for the year. Mm. And her hay fever disappeared.
Oh, yes, I've heard this. If you eat honey from the area that you're living in, yes. it can really help with hay fever.
Yeah, because it's my understanding is it's supposed to be if you consume honey that's within a 10-kilometre radius.
Okay.
But yeah, she hasn't had, I suppose, any issue with, you know, hay fever since. Actually, she has started keeping bees herself and producing her own honey just because she's terrified that she might run out and have hay fever again.
But yeah, and there's scientific backing to that as well. There's been lots of research around it. So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
where it started. So how did it end up being about bee beds then? And tell us a little bit about what these bee beds are.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, I seen a TV program maybe about 3 years ago about bee bed therapy and the benefits. And I decided then that I would, try create the same therapy myself. So it's about 3 years now, okay. I suppose, in development. So what is bee bed therapy? It's like a unique experience of relaxation, stress relief and emotional balance. Okay. So while you're lying on a bed with thousands of native Irish honeybees humming beneath you.
Where are they?
They're underneath. You have absolutely no contact with the bees whatsoever.
Okay.
So you're in a cabin. You can look out, you know, the window and you can see the bees entering and exit. And actually that's quite, it's quite nice to see because the bees are carrying the pollen in the pollen baskets on their hind legs. So you can see the bees enter and exit through to the colonies.
Okay.
With all these myriads of colours, oranges, yellows, you know, it just depends what pollen they're particularly carrying.
So they're busy at work, really?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yes. So basically then... what you do is, so when you enter the cabin, you're met with a delightful aromatherapy experience because there's the smell of the honey, the beeswax, the propolis, and the royal jelly. And at this point that you can hear the bees, the hum of the bees. So from the window, you can see the bees enter and exit. They don't come anywhere near you within within the cabin.
Okay.
So then you can choose to lie on the bed and feel the micro vibrations created by the bees, or you can sit in the chair and enjoy the aromatherapy and the gentle buzzing that's created by the bees.
Okay.
But like I said, there is absolutely no contact. So when you're entering and exiting the cabin, if you're at all nervous, we can provide bee suits, you know, to people when they're entering and exiting, you know, the cabin.
Okay. And what sort of people have done this so far? Like, what are they going for, a relaxation, or what are they going for?
It's a little bit of everything. I had a lady, I suppose, that flew in from Luxembourg because she was thinking of developing this herself, and she didn't know where else that she could try it. I had a couple there from Germany recently that were just in Ireland. They weren't aware of any bee bed facilities in Germany, and they said they'd give it a go. So typically, I suppose it's the health benefits. So bee bed therapy relates back as far as it was an ancient method of healing dating back to ancient Greece that was typically only available to royalty. It was linked to apitherapy, which uses bee products like honey and propolis and royal jelly for healing. But with the bee bed therapy, you get to experience the natural healing benefits without disturbing the colony or taking any of the products that they produce.
Okay.
So the bees continue their vital work for their colony to thrive while you get to share the energy that they generate through their daily activity.
Wow. And how many bees are we talking about?
So there's one queen. There's one queen that lays all the eggs in the colony. So she lays by the sun. So on the 21st of June is when she lays the maximum amount of eggs.
Okay.
So in July, then the hive, the colony is at its maximum, and there could be up to maybe 120,000, 150,000 bees in the hive.
And is that the optimum time to go to the bee bed therapy with you?
Well, there's basically, the bee bed therapy is only really open from April to September.
Okay.
But it is, July would be, I suppose, the busiest time. That's when there is, like I said, the most amount of bees. But then it depends on the weather. Like, we had an absolutely fantastic May and the bees were humming. Like, I would be going out in the morning. Like, there was one particular morning, because I'm used to the sound of, you know, the bees, like, say, when I'm getting into the car to drop my son to school. And there was just one morning, like, they sounded different. They just sounded busier than normal. And this was 8 o'clock, but a swarm had just landed in. So that has happened regularly. I think for some reason, the bees just naturally seem to, you know, come to this area. Like, I regularly get swarms, and it's, it's just, I think it's the natural activity of the bees to this particular area.
And what's important in the cabin, am I right in thinking, is that micro vibration that they create?
Exactly.
And then the smells and the soothingness. How long do people usually spend in the cabin?
Typically about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, typically about.
And what do people say about it? Do they find it very relaxing, or do they, I presume they don't bring their phones or anything with it. That would be kind of against the point, wouldn't it?
It would. Now, I would prefer that people didn't bring their phones because they can't really immerse themselves. So like I said, when you step into the cabin, initially you have like the aromatherapy. So you have like the smell of the beeswax, the honey, you know, the propolis, and you can hear the bees. And it is so relaxing. Like, one lady came one day and she said to me, she goes, I never fall asleep, you know, during the day. It's just, so she said, like, I think I'll just lie there and relax. And her booking was for an hour. It was 2.5 hours later, and I had to knock on the cabin. and she could not believe that she had fallen asleep.
Okay, so it's that lovely chilled out feeling.
It is, yes. So like, you know, scientists have discovered that bees emit a healing frequency that can help have a positive impact, you know, on human, you know, health. So like there's, I suppose it's claimed that it's to help with pain relief, inflammation, low mood. It restores vitality, reduces stress, tension and anxiety. Like I think personally, lying on the bee bed and, you know, for 10 minutes is the equivalent to an hour of sleep.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Well, if people want to check it out, or even if they want to see what the cabin looks like and what happens, you have an Instagram account, haven't you? How would people find that?
Yeah, so we're on Instagram. It's the number 3 bees, B-E-E-S dot I-E. We're also on Facebook. So it's Ballyhobbock Bee Beds.
Okay.
Then we have a website called 3bees.ie.
Lots of ways to find out more details about Ballyhobbock Bee Beds. And they are just outside the southeast in the Glen of Amal in County Wicklow, very close to Carlow there and Wexford as well. Gillian, thanks a million.
No problem at all, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill and you are listening to Beat on this Sunday morning, of course, and thinking of what to do with the kids as we head into the first full week of the summer primary school holidays. Well, Waterford City has a brand new Viking adventure, especially for children, and it's kicking off next weekend on July the 5th. Cleena Purcell is the head curator at Waterford Treasures Collection of Museums, and she joins me this morning on the Sunday Grill to talk us through this new attraction. Another attraction when it comes to the Waterford Treasures Collection of Museums. Cleena, there's so much going on, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. The Viking Triangle is bustling these days.
So tell us about this new idea, the Children's Viking Tour.
Yeah, so I suppose, look, Waterford is Ireland's oldest city and we're very proud of our Viking heritage here. And of course, the museum's located in the Viking Triangle. It kind of occurred to us, firstly, we don't have a whole lot of Vikings. And secondly, we don't have a whole lot of stuff for kids. So we sort of thought we might, you know, two birds, one stone, and really sort of put out a very interesting, kind of slightly different children's attraction for this summer.
Okay, and what age group are we thinking of with this?
So we kind of recommend children between kind of 5 and 12, but children under 5 are welcome. We do have sort of an option for them. Now, they actually go free, but you'll see all the details of that on our website. But kids between 5 and 12 will probably be best placed to kind of enjoy what we have on offer.
Okay, and immersive really is the word for this, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We believe in sort of very hands-on kind of history here. So it's all about kind of not just sort of hearing about the history, which can be, you know, a little bit dull, but very much sort of experiencing it and actually living the history.
So how does this start? What happens? What will they experience?
So you'll be greeted by one of our resident Vikings. We have some very talented Vikings here working with us. And she will basically take you on a very short sort of little tour, first of all, down to Reginald's Tower, which is, of course, one of the most famous monuments in the city and the only national monument in the country named for a Viking. Okay. So King Rognvald, the first king of Waterford, would be named for himself.
Okay,
so you'll go down
that.
To Reginald's. Yeah. So our very first king. He went on to become king of York afterwards. So a fairly important guy.
Wow.
in the
sort okay.
of broad history. So you go down, have a sort of little chat about Reginald's Tower and also the, of course, Viking longboat.
Yeah.
Which is just next to it there. And then she will bring you back up and into our Viking house. So we have a replica Viking house built as part of King of the Vikings. And a lot of the time when you go in there, you're just there for the virtual reality and the kind of house itself flies under the radar. But the house will kind of, you know, be brought to life here. So you'll get to touch everything and feel everything and sort of participate in a few activities to do with Viking life in Waterford as well.
Okay. And you get a sword, I hear, which I'd be very into.
Oh, very important. Yes. So everybody will get a little sort of souvenir sword as part of their tour so they can defend Vadrafjord from any other marauding Vikings.
Lovely. Now, it's a walking tour, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So it's all about sort of keeping nice and active and enjoying the summer weather in the sunny southeast. So you're walking around the Viking Triangle.
Okay, good stuff. So you're in a Viking replica house. You're getting to see outside Reginald's Tower, is that right?
Yes, exactly. So it's a kind of a little walk outside and you have a look at the boat as well.
Okay. And then you're walking around the streets of Waterford as well, which I presume look very different to Vikings days, but we still have some remnants of what was here, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you walk around Waterford today, as you say, there's not a whole lot built above ground, which is kind of Viking in origin. So it's a little bit of using our imaginations. But at the same point, you know, you can sort of visualize what the city would have looked like. The streets, for instance, are in exactly the same position. There's a lot of medieval buildings around as well. So there's a little bit of a transitional period there. So yeah, it sort of will be brought to life through through imaginations, but also what we can explore that's still here.
Okay, good stuff. Would you say it was very smelly back then, Cliona? As a city.
I'm not sure it's a period we might have liked to have lived in, definitely. There's a few little elements to it that maybe might not have been terribly pleasant. But yeah, no, Viking cities generally would be noted for a slightly unpleasant smell.
Very unpleasant.
You've had animals living in the house and that kind of thing.
Oh, really? Animals living in the house?
Yeah.
Wow.
Would be fairly common, yeah.
And we're not talking about like our pet cockapoos or anything like that?
No. Just a nice sheep in the house with you. You know, you might keep the pigs outside, hopefully, but sort of very different.
Okay. Well, thankfully, you don't get to see the sheep in the house or anything, but you do get to do a half an hour of a walking tour, a really immersive tour that's coming to Waterford starting next weekend on July the 5th. WaterfordTreasures.com. For more details on this family Viking adventure, and you can become a Viking for the day at that new tour that's taking part of that. Thanks a million for that, Cliona. As you said, ages between 5 and 12. It includes a sword that you get to take home. WaterfordTreasures.com if you're interested. Kids really absorb history, don't they? They love the stories. I was only at Horrible Histories last week in Dublin, and to me it was actually quite hard to listen to some of the awful things that happened, but kids love all this.
Oh, for sure. Kids are very gory minded, yeah. We find here a lot of the time.
Really
the questions
are.
We get from children will stay with you, I can say that much.
And can you answer those questions as well?
Within reason, I think.
Okay, good stuff. Well, if you're interested, it's WaterfordTreasures.com, and it is that new Viking tour, especially for children. It's weekends only, isn't it? Saturdays and Sundays.
It is, yeah, exactly. So a nice weekend event.
Lovely stuff. WaterfordTreasures.com. Cliona, thanks a million for joining me this morning.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's Beat 102-103 on a Sunday morning. You are listening to The Sunday Grill. Let's do movies. Someone very different for movies over there. Say hello.
Hello. How's it going? It is Sunday and I am happy to be here.
And he is our Formula One super fan, Cillian Doyle. So really, there was only one person who could review the F1 movie for us. It stars Brad Pitt, our very own Kerry Condon. He's an F1 maestro. He is Cillian Doyle.
Good morning.
He will be in pole position and will absolutely lap up the movie. I had to AI these because when it comes to puns, I am not good.
Okay.
Will he race through his review, giving us all the fast facts we need? Look at your fake laugh.
There we go. Will I hit the apex? Will I run wide?
I don't know what the apex is. Let's have a listen to a clip.
Why has he got a helmet?
Safety. Joshua, your seat is safe, okay? Son is here for the audition.
When was the last time you won a race?
Sunday, Daytona.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Formula One.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then same as you.
Sidebar, bitte, Robin. When I interviewed with you, many veteran drivers...
Yeah, who all turned you down?
How many?
7.
That's a lot.
I'm number 7?
You're 8.
This is a disaster.
Starting to feel more like a 9.
And technically, there is one who I've not heard from yet.
So I am a 9.
You know how numbers work, right?
In business, my most inspired ideas come late.
Yeah. The best things in life usually arrive 9th, right?
With respect, Ruben, I cannot condone we spend our only test day giving your long-lost teammate an audition.
Gaspar, you misunderstand. We're not auditioning him. He's auditioning us.
There you go. That is the F1 movie. Loads of familiar faces in there. In fact, I see a man who played an assassin in Killing Eve. Remember that series? That was brilliant for a while and then went terrible. And of course, the most recognisable face being Brad Pitt. I was wondering why he was on the PR circuit.
And Thurles' own Kerry Condon.
And Thurles' own Kerry Condon with her very own Irish accent.
Exactly. Which sounds a bit like a fake one, but it's so unique Irish.
Is she based on anyone? Because isn't there an Irish woman who works in F1?
A Northern Irish girl, okay. Bernie Collins. Yeah, she was. not based on her, kind of similar to what she does. She's basically she will be the first ever like technical director of an F1 team. But of course, Lewis Hamilton is co-produced it along with Apple Films.
Okay.
So obviously Lewis is big for diversity in the sport.
Yeah.
So like it's great to see especially in a movie. But
have you known this is coming out for years?
Yeah, I saw when it was announced and I was a bit iffy because you know when you're mad about something and a film comes out and you're like, oh my god, what are they going to do with it? It's like being an Irish person and they're making an Irish film and you just know like it's just going to be woolly jumpers and owl ones with scones and that's all you're going to get.
All that stuff.
But it was actually really, really good. I really, really enjoyed it. It was.
I'm really surprised there hasn't been anything like this before. I know Brian reviewed something that was around kind of the racing track, but I think that was more a gaming movie.
Gran Turismo.
Yes.
Yeah, with David Harbour. There was one with Chris Hemsworth. And Russia was called.
Yes.
I actually haven't watched that, surprisingly. I was just like, oh. Because when you watch stuff that you're mad into, so like you know it's going to be fabricated or whatever.
Okay.
But this is a fictional story, but exists in the real world of F1, if that makes sense.
No, so that doesn't make sense.
So I describe it like, if you're not a Formula One fan, it's like watching a movie about Man United where a fictional player goes to Man United, but you still have your Wayne Rooney's and Ronaldo's and everyone around them. So they're all in it.
Okay, so what? Are we dealing with certain F1 teams? Or what are we doing?
All of them are in it. Okay. All the drive, Max is in it, Carlos Sainz, like all the real, like every sponsor you could think of, everything is as real as it gets.
Wow.
And that's really, really cool. So the basically the plot, without giving anything away, is Brad Pitt's character, Sonny Hayes, was a up-and-coming Formula One driver.
Okay.
And he had a massive crash with Ayrton Senna in the Spanish Grand Prix.
Wow, okay.
So he got injured and he was American, so he moved back to America. So kind of, as you said, washed up, whatever, was doing Daytona over there, NASCAR, doing everything else, but never went back to Formula One.
Okay, and we hear that in the clip that he says he won in Daytona a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of met with a, really?
Yeah. So he is then confronted by his friend who used to race. I don't know if they're on the same team or they were against each other, but he now owns this Formula One team, Apex GP.
And that's Javier Bardem.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they're like the new team. So in Formula One, you have 10 teams, but now there's 11 teams in this sport. So they're
and
a new
this is
team.
A fake team. Obviously.
Fake team. Okay. They're 3 years in the sport and you're bored, you have objectives to meet, and basically they had to win at least one race or else the team was done. And your man had like put 350 million and he came to his friend and he was like, look, will you race for me for the last half of the season? We just need one race. And your man's like, no, I don't want to do it anymore. He comes back and then it's all about getting that race win.
Okay.
But he also has a rookie teammate who they don't get on eye to eye. So, you know, Brad Pitt's kind of this guy, I know it all, I've done this before. And then you have the rookie who's all like, you're an old ass bum.
And that's the character called Joshua Pearson that's played by Damson Idris.
Yes, and he's very, very good.
Okay, great stuff.
So
where does Kerry come in? Kerry Condon,
Tipperary's
own?
Yeah, she is the technical director of the team. So she's all about the aerodynamics and making the car faster and having a look. So she's a big part of it as well. I'm actually in it, I think.
Oh, yes. You said that to me this morning.
So I'm probably a pixel in a corner somewhere. But I have to say, it was directed by your man who directed Top Gun, and the realism in it, I'm actually curious to know how. I saw how they filmed it, but it's just like they're having wheel-to-wheel battles with like Lewis Hamilton, with Max Verstappen. There's real-life crashes, and that was the whole point of the film, was to have realism and to use that technology like in Top Gun. And it, like, for someone who knew it was a movie, I was invested in the race because I was there like watching it like it was a real race and I was like, oh my god.
And is Brad Pitt a driver in it?
Yes, he's the driver.
Is Brad Pitt not about 60?
Yeah, exactly. So that's why it kind of doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. 61 looks well on it, doesn't
Fernando Alonso still racing the sport, so I suppose anything can
happen. What age is Fernando?
He's like in his late 40s.
Is it Fernando?
Fernando Alonso,
Fernando.
But all the drivers are in it. Max is featured. David Croft and Martin Brundle of Sky F1, they're the commentators in it. Gunter Steiner makes a little cameo on it. Yeah, Toto Wolff's in it. Christian
Brilliant.
Horner's in it. Like, they have the guys from the press conferences doing the actual questions. Will Buxton, of course, of Drive to Survive.
Yeah, from Drive to Survive.
It is so, like, detailed that it doesn't feel like it's not real, if that makes sense.
And it sounds like it's quite fast moving, is it?
Yeah, it was a 2.5 hour film, but it did not feel 2.5 hours. It was brilliantly paced.
Okay.
It was so, so good. Now,
has it got fun elements in it? Is it funny, comedic?
Yeah, Brad Pitt is funny. It is. It's got
and Kerry Condon can be funny as well,
yeah.
I find.
Oh, she's funny. And she said one quote in it, like when he was driving fast, it was like, he's flying. And I was like, it's just so Irish. But of course, it is a Hollywood film. So there's going to be things that happen. So I won't spoil it, but there's one scene that just happened. And I was like, that would never in a million years happen in a Formula One race. But of course, Hollywood. Okay. And then you have the little bit of romance in it as well, which is Hollywood as well. But
they can't just appeal to F1 fans.
Exactly.
It has to have a bit of everything.
Exactly. And I think it'll do great for the sport, because without, like, it was very detailed but very explained as well. As in, like, a lot of terms, like David Croft and Martin Brundle would be explaining, like kind of they do on TV as well when you're watching a race.
Okay.
Obviously, people who are watching know what's going on, but they always have to factor in that, like, you may be flicking on Sky Sports for the first time ever and you could be watching your first ever Formula One race.
Okay.
It was really, really good. Music, 10 out of 10. Soundtrack is amazing, which is out in vinyl on Friday there, last, and I got it. Hans Zimmer does the score.
Oh,
so
lovely.
Absolutely perfection. And yeah, just an all round great film. Okay. I really, really enjoyed it.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
It is out now in the cinema. It is made by Apple TV, but they have yet to confirm when it will go to their streaming media, when you can watch it at home. So, and with all movies, I always say, if you can get to the cinema to watch something, go there, because I'm sure it looked amazing in the cinema.
Oh, it did. And Max Verstappen was in it, so that's why. And he pulled off some unreal overtakes in the film, and I was like, oh, Max.
And what's their, like, are they acting in it, any of them?
No, they're just kind of, like, Silverstone, it was, like, when I was watching on TV,
yeah.
I was watching, like, they were doing, like, the national anthem, so, like, Brad Pitt standing in with them, like, when you're watching it live on TV, and then you're like, wow, but then in the film, it's not like, oh, they were there, so it looks like everything is it's really, really good.
I must check this out.
I would definitely watch again, like, I'd pay money to see it again, I really had a good time.
Okay, 2.5 hours, it's a big one, but a good one. Let's black pudding it. What would you give out of 10?
I give it 10 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah, maybe 9 out of 10 for some of the stuff that happened that I was like, that's a bit BS.
Yeah.
But like, all around, I went in with low expectations because I was like, this is a Hollywood film about Formula One. They're going to butcher everything. But no, honestly, really good time. 2.5 hours, didn't feel like 2.5 hours. Maybe just because I'm a big fan of it. Mm. But honest to God, good time. Just solid good time.
We go 9 then?
We go 9 black puddings.
Okay, 9 black puddings out of 10. It's called simply F1. Brad Pitt, Kerry Condon, lots of other familiar faces, including Javier Bardem in there. Thanks a million.
No hassle.
That's Colleen Doyle, of course, in case you're wondering.
Yep.
Back tomorrow for Beat Breakfast.
Yeah, 7 a.m. early, early.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.